Progress Village was Tampa's first affordable housing suburb, and today we'll hear its story. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. WUSF is shining a light on the historic Tampa neighborhood Progress Village in a special two-part series, part of our ongoing project, Telling Tampa Bay Stories. We're going to hear from residents in just a moment, but first I want to welcome our producer, Stephanie Colombini, who oversaw the whole project. Stephanie, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks, Robin.
So where exactly is Progress Village?
So Progress Village is near the middle of Hillsborough County. It's right off I-75. It's bordered by Palm River, Claremel, Riverview, and Gibsonton.
How long's it been around?
So developers announced plans to construct this neighborhood in 1958, and the whole neighborhood was built as a place where African Americans could buy relatively low-cost homes. Keep in mind, segregation was very much alive at this time. People started moving in around 1960, and I visited the home of one of the founding members of Progress Village. His name's Emmanuel P. Johnson. He showed me his first mortgage, and he was paying $56 a month to live in his house back then. So definitely, you know, a lot more affordable than anything you would see now. And Mr. Johnson says his family was one of five who first came to the village, and he refers to them as pioneers. And they really were, because when they came to Progress Village, there was nothing besides the houses themselves. They were surrounded by cow pastures, and so they were pretty disconnected from Tampa's existing neighborhoods. So the residents, they didn't want, say, an official from downtown Tampa dictating how they ran their community. So Mr. Johnson helped found the Progress Village Civic Council, which was going to advocate for the neighborhood. And this is what he told me about that.
We started the Civic Council because we had no street lights, no bus service, no postal service. When it got dark out here back then, all we had out here was lightning bugs. We didn't have nothing out here. Lightning bugs. When I'd come in from work, I'd come in, get in my little car, and tell the people, the handful of people, wasn't 100 people out here. I said, we're having a meeting on such and such a date, and we go talk about street lights. Then we go talk about bus service, postal service. We wanted the mailman to bring the mail and put it on the door. They couldn't do that. We had to go into Ybor City to get our mail. They couldn't do that, so you put up a mailbox, and the mailman would come by and put your mail in the box. That's how we got our mail. And the rest is history.
Well, so it really started from nothing, but it's changed quite a bit since then.
Oh, yeah. So Mr. Johnson says in the early days, there was barely 100 people living in Progress Village. Now the neighborhood has thousands of residents. There's shopping centers, churches, all those things that they didn't have when it was first formed in 1960. But many residents say the neighborhood's kind of taken a turn for the worse in recent years in terms of safety and upkeep of the neighborhood. We're going to hear more about that in this two-part series.
Right. So we're about to get to those stories. How did you collect those stories? You said you spoke with Mr. Johnson right at his home?
That's right. So I met with Mr. Johnson one-on-one because everybody in the planning process of this project had told me that Mr. Johnson was a talker. So I wanted to give him ample time to share his story. And he definitely had a lot to say. I was at his house for like 4 hours that day. But to collect all of the other stories, we hosted two interview sessions at the Emmanuel P. Johnson Community Center in Progress Village, which is named after Mr. Johnson. And we invited residents and people who work in the village to come there and talk with us. This project was a collaboration with journalism students at the University of South Florida. So we mentored members of an advanced reporting class in the weeks leading up to the interview sessions, and then they sort of co-interviewed everyone who participated, which was really cool.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Stephanie. Let's get to those stories. We start with Pamela Ennis Colleton, who grew up in Progress Village when it was first founded. She shares some fond memories from her childhood and talks about the community's first family reunion.
My name is Pamela Ennis Colleton. I've lived in Progress Village since September 5th, 1960. I've been here for 57 years, so I grew up in the neighborhood. I've worked at the Parks and Recreation for like 8 years, running a basketball program at the gym. So then a lot of the newer kids and stuff I met. It's a feeling of home. I lived at 79th Street. There was only like 5 or 8 houses built when we moved on that street. Everybody loved the park. Mr. Johnson would open up the park for us in the evenings. He ran the concession stand. Any day of the week, we know when he's there. Around about 3 or 4 o'clock, he would put a quarter in the jukebox and it played 5 records. By the time he played those records, the park was full. He played rhythm and blues songs, James Brown, Wilson Pickett. In front of the concession stand, we had a large piece of concrete to where the music was playing. You could go and dance if you wanted to. And we had a 4-square court, and that stayed busy, the 4-square court. From the beginning to the end, that stayed busy. So that's where we would be. And it was okay, because once we was to the park, we was like in a safe haven. Our parents didn't worry about us because we was at the park. If they needed us for anything, they knew to come to the park. So that was our hangout spot, the park. I moved away from Progress Village in 1973. I got married, and he was trying to take me away from my family. And that wasn't working too well with me. So I came back to the village and been here ever since. I bought my own home. It took me a long time to own my house. But yeah, owning that house right there is important to me because my children always have some place to come back to. I always knew I could always go back to my mama's house if I had to go back. And that's how I want my children to feel, like they can always come home. You could come home when you can't go anyplace else. I picked up this first annual family reunion booklet. This is one of my joys. It says, first annual family reunion. This is the seal of Progress Village Civic Council. There's 4 symbols on there. We've got a tire that means that we work hard. We've got folded hands, which mean brotherhood. We're American citizens, and we trust in God. So this is what our symbols mean. We had this in 2006 was our first year for our family reunion. And it was, how do I say, off the chain? We had people coming back to Progress Village from years, who hadn't been back in Progress Village from years. So it was beautiful. The last reunion we had, I did this program. The program I put on was called Careers on Parade. What it was supposed to do was to let people see that we as a community have done great things, to let our young kids see that you can be anyone you want to be or do anything you want to do. Katrina is my oldest daughter. She was one of our guest speakers. Katrina did fantastic because Katrina grew up in Progress Village, so everybody knows Katrina. Katrina was a basketball player. Katrina traveled every summer with USA Basketball. And then Katrina was drafted number 19 for the LA Sparks in 1997 when the WNBA started. So when she comes to the village, like when I was running the basketball program, everybody wanted to play on her team. So she was one of our icons. I feel like the middle-aged people need to come out and help with our younger kids, because our younger kids don't have a vision. They don't have a focus. instead of us going up, it seems like we're going down, and we need to go back up. So if there's anything I could do or anything to make it better for the younger kids, I do.
Pamela's story was produced with the help of USF student journalist Megan Holtzworth. You're listening to part one of a special two-part Florida Matters on our series Telling Tampa Bay Stories. I'm Robin Sussingham. We'll be right back. I'm Robin Sussingham, and this is a special two-part Florida Matters. We're listening to the residents of Progress Village, Tampa's first affordable housing suburb, share their stories about growing up in that neighborhood. It takes a village to raise a child. That adage was quoted by a number of residents interviewed for this series, including Angela Gilmore. She shares her memories of going to school in Progress Village and what it was like being the daughter of the deputy sheriff.
Hi, I'm Angela Gilmore. Our family, the Gilmore family, is a founding family in Progress Village. My dad purchased the home in 1962. Back in when I went to school, Progress Village Elementary School was first through sixth grade. The school still sits at the end of 83rd Avenue. It took us about five blocks to walk to school. And Progress Boulevard was not a Progress Boulevard. It was nothing at all. It was like a dirt road, really. And we had to walk, and the streets are alphabetically ordered when you get on this side. So it's Alameda, Bahia, Croton, Dahlia, Endive, and Flower. So everybody knows that. That's the way you remember, because you know it's alphabetical order. And then it starts from 78th Street all the way back to like 88th. And the school, there's a little short bridge before you get to it where you cross over. Sometimes they have water, but sometimes they don't. I always thought that was so cool that we was going on an island to go to school. Our principal was Mrs. Sweetress Williams. Her personality was as interesting as her name. She wore beautiful suits of really pretty colors and hats. She was proper. She was an older lady. She was beautiful, though. She was a good big mama to have, you know what I mean? And every morning when we had devotion, she'd open up the same way. She would say, "Good morning, boys and girls and faculty." That was just something every morning, man. But we loved her. I don't know anybody who didn't love her. We loved her. And not strangely, but since I'm saying this, we also had white teachers. My fourth grade teacher, Ms. Clark, she was one of my hearts. I love her to death. And then we had Mr. Spontag, who was a kindergarten teacher, was always here. He was part of the deco. He was always here. So I never looked at him as somebody that didn't belong. And you know what? I don't remember racism. I don't remember being oppressed I don't remember that if you're talking about Progress Village. The teachers we had there lived in Progress Village. And I always thought the adage, "It takes a village to raise a child," I always thought that was about Progress Village. The way we were raised in our school in Progress Village Elementary, they won't even let teachers do that now because it's too much trying to be politically correct. But we got spankings, we got yelled at, we got, "I'm gonna tell your mama right now." I mean, and they were the best teachers. And then because our teachers lived in Progress Village and that the whole village does take care of a child, we are like brothers and sisters. Everybody, mama was mama and everybody, daddy was daddy, you know. Anybody can pull a switch out and pop you with it. Tap them legs with a switch. Anybody could be mama. We developed a Progress Village culture, and we walk around representing that culture. I can remember my dad working for four jobs. Now, he worked for Florida Portland Cement, which is on 41, but that's what brought us here. This was closer. Maybe fifth grade. It may be fifth grade that he started being an auxiliary deputy sheriff, and then after that, he was deputy sheriff and then a correction officer. And we had this big German Shepherd at the time, and we used to tell the kids, "Oh, our daddy is a police, and we got a police dog." So he wasn't really a police dog. We used to tell people that, though. Everybody knew my dad was a deputy sheriff, you know, so they were like, well, Mr. Gilmore, Mr. Gilmore. I've heard so many. I'm a veteran. I did 8 years in the Army. I got out on a medical discharge, and when I got here, I enlisted for deputy sheriff. By me working in the field sometimes, I run into inmates or ex-inmates who knew my father. And they say, oh, yeah, Mr. Gilmore was at Falkenberg Jail. Or he was at Orient Road Jail. I remember that. Mr. Gilmore. And they always say his name like that, Mr. Gilmore. You know? and it always is a positive story. Just this year, I've had people to tell me, your dad taught me this or your dad taught me that. I'm like, what? My dad been passed away 25 years. And I'm still hearing stories about how he helped this one and helped that one. Being the first year of my mom just sold her house just this year. So we've been here all that time. You know, we had our foot in this. And only thing that I think about it now is what I hear on TV. I don't have like an opinion of now because I'm not in the midst of it. But I hear things on TV that never happened. When they surrounded the house over there on Fur and the police were going in and the guys got shot. You never heard that back there when we were here.
Angela's story was produced with the help of USF student journalist Hafsa Qureshi. The concern about how younger generations of Progress Village residents are maintaining the community is shared by many. Dinah M. Jones has lived in the neighborhood all her life. She talks about the influence the now senior population of Progress Village has had on her.
My name is Dinah M. Jones. We came in, it was in March of 1966, 5 years old. Well, my parents are Priscilla and John Montgomery, and they both was ministers, so I had to go to church all the time. And my father just passed away in 2014. He was 99 years old, 7 months from 100. So I thank God for that, and I thank God for my mother still being alive at 86. And I grew up with five brothers and three sisters, counting me, makes 9 of us in the home, in a 3-bedroom, 1-bath. But we made it. We made it. Oh, the boys had their room, the girls had their room, mom and pop. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, now I can beat them up. I should say that, Lord. I mean, I said that. But it's a blessing. It's a blessing to have my parents so long. Oh, you would have loved my father. He grew pecans. He had a pecan tree. He grew his own vegetables. He had orange tree, grapefruit, tangerine. And he would give all the neighbors some. One lady said, Mr. Montgomery, can I come get some green? She said, sure, go look in the back of the yard. Get your bag, lady. Get you some green. That tangerine tree is dead and gone. When he died, the tree went. Mm-hmm. And I know I don't have brothers gonna take up and manage it like my father. Oh man, them boys, forget it. Now, he still had a pecan tree, and it bears pecan every 2 years. It's still there, but they ain't maintain it like pop. No. Y'all would have saw my father's funeral. My mama didn't know half of the people, but he knew them. And it's just been a great community, getting to know everybody and all the older people that we grew up with. They was like our parents too. Emmanuel P. Johnson, wow, that's the greatest man around. You know, to be 96, and I don't know how much schooling or anything he had, but God has blessed him to still be alive to tell a story. Oh my God, he's like a dad. Oh my God, I knew his wife, Miss Ruby. They have 5 children. Emmanuel P. Johnson is awesome. And you know what he tell me? He said, when I'm gone, his name gonna still ring. Yes, it is. The building alone. Everybody gonna say, we know Emmanuel P. Johnson. Taught his children very well. He's a very Christian man. Yes. And he loved people. And he just like my father was. Stop anywhere, talk to everybody. They found nobody, no stranger. It's good to find good people. No matter what color, who you are, God made us all. If you ask me, Emmanuel P. Johnson is like a king around here because not only what he have done, his personality, his talk, the way he try to tell the young people to get what you can while you can. But he loved Miss Ruby. He loved his wife. He didn't know she was sick. And that took a lot out of his life. And he added on the back of their house for her. Big old room he got back there, another room. She never got to be in it. She passed away. I think she was at the age of 47. So it was a big toll for him when he lost his wife. But as life went on, he got himself together and had to move on. He's 96 years old. And my father, October the 15th, would have been 103. Yes, and I wish he was here to tell you something. Been back 10 with John Montgomery. But they loved her. But one thing about it, if you sit and listen to what they got to tell you, you're going to learn a lot. That old man done seen a lot of things come and go. I respect the elders. Oh, yes, every one of them out here. I respect them. I haven't seen it in some that's going to take up. When them elders gone, it's going to be really different. We'll see what the future holds, but the ones that are passing on are the ones kept this community together. I don't know. I don't know. That's, you know, one day I was sitting thinking about that. Wonder how Progress Village would be with Manuel P. Johnson, my mother. See, we have Officer Jones, he already deceased. The Beatties, both parents are gone. Miss Underwood, oh man, I could tell you a lot about Mama Tess Underwood. She kept all the children. She did that for about 50 years. Kept everybody chillin'. You want to have a good babysitter? Go to Mama Tess Underwood. She dead and gone. So it's like, who else now got a good babysitter? Who can you find? Your children not hurt. She combed the little girl's hair. The parents bring them there. She do their hair. When they go home, they look beautiful. Are you going to iron that again? But our children live in a legacy. They're living on. And it's hard to see the older ones leave. My mother, I pray for her. I don't want her to leave, but I know one day it's coming. But she's 86 years old. Yeah, she's a blessed lady. Hopefully they keep Progress Village going really really good like it has been. And they'll keep the drugs and all that out and try to just, as their parents going, step up to like how, they're not going to be like them, but step up and do the right things, you know?
Dinah's story was produced with the help of USF student journalist Mikey Shine. You heard Dinah talk about Mr. Johnson and that his legacy will live on in the building she was speaking in, the Emmanuel P. Johnson Community Center, where we conducted all the interviews for this series. Well, now we'll hear from the man himself. Here's Mr. Johnson sharing his memory of the day the rec center opened.
You know, the best thing I felt like that I was so proud of, proudest number, when they had the ribbon cutting, March 26, 2016. The Emmanuel P. Johnson Community Center. That's what it was named. I didn't know about it until they had built it when they told me they was going to build it. I didn't know what it was going to be. There was going to be a new gymnasium and all that. And I was glad of that, you know, because Progress Village is progressing. Progress, the name of it is Progress Village. When they had the ribbon cutting, you see, it was too many people to be inside of the center. They had a tent outside. I didn't want to say nothing because I talked too long, talked too much. So they gave me 3 minutes. So I had to think of something real quick of what to say. I says, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Emmanuel P. Johnson. I live in Unit 1 in Progress Village. I say, I'm a man of a very few words, but when I speak, I say a lot. But not today. This is your day. Stuff together. Give them tears. I says, I want to leave a little something behind for the young people. I say, are there any young people in the house? All the old people jumped up. Yeah. I got a big kick out of that, you know. I said, man, what did I say? And I said, now, me, I just want to leave something behind for the young people, because that went to my concession stand. That's what it was. And if it wasn't for the children, I wouldn't have been what I am today. And I told them, I said, I just want to leave something behind for the young people. I said, young people, I'm going to tell you something I know that you do not know. You better write this down. You do not know that today is a gift, yesterday a memory, and tomorrow's a dream. I said, when you come into this world, you come in with a dream of what you want to be when you get older. You might want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a preacher. But it makes no difference. what you want to be. But what you do not know is you got to go to school, get an education. You got to go to college. You get a degree. And with the help of your parents and the good Lord above, you can be anything you want to be. And I said, now, they give me 3 minutes, and my daughter was behind me on the stage. She was saying, Daddy, you're 3 minutes. Your 3 minutes is already up. I couldn't stop right then. I couldn't stop then. I said, she said, give me 3 minutes to speak. I said, but I feel a breeze coming, and it's time for me to close the door. But I want to go to church. Scripture in the Bible, 16:24, Proverbs. They said, pleasant words are like a honeycomb. They give sweetness to the soul, and they are healthy to the bones and the body. Nothing is sweeter than honey and pleasant words. I said, now, I never say goodbye. Have a nice day. But I promise you, if we meet again, I'll have more to say. But always my end of my conversation, my last word is always pleasant words. I said, I didn't quite hear that. What was that? Everybody, pleasant words. That was so good, it made me feel so good. You see, you got to change with the time. Progress was 60 years ago, you just heard it. I'd like to know, I'd like to be here 60 years from now. Can you imagine that? Because I know when we came out here, it took us a year. We've done things year by year. And time changed so fast and so much happened. And then when they come up with this building, Manny P. Johnson Community Center, I couldn't have felt no better than when they told me that. That's the greatest feelings I've ever had. Pleasant words.
That's it for today's show. You can hear all of these stories on our website, WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters tab. You can also view old photos from the early days of Progress Village, as well as ones we took at our interview sessions. Be sure to tune in next week for more stories about Progress Village. And we're introducing a new podcast where you can hear more interesting details and hear about what it's like from our side of the mic. The new podcast is called Florida Matters More, and you can find it on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts. Telling Tampa Bay Stories was produced by Stephanie Colombini and Mary Shedden. And Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.